1039 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale is proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Dan, how are you today?
I'm good, Ken. How are you?
I am doing very, very well. And we're getting to some warmer weather, which is great. And our guest today is Amanda Sears of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. And Amanda has the courage to return to Feldis and Kale. How are you today, Amanda?
I'm good. Thank you for having me back on.
Well, it's our pleasure. And today we're going to discuss how the American Rescue Plan is helping working families. The American Rescue Plan has been passed in Congress, but also proposed are the American Jobs Plan and American Families Plan. And, you know, Dan, nowhere do I see the senior citizens bailout plan, but, you know, maybe it's on the way. Who knows?
maybe it is. Maybe it is. Well, Amanda, since we last spoke, the American Rescue Plan passed. It's a pretty significant piece of legislation, a lot of different funding and different sources. And can you give us just a quick rundown about how the American Rescue Plan has benefited and will benefit working families?
Absolutely, and thank you. Yeah, so we're are really excited about how quickly this administration and Congress got to work on the American Rescue Plan and passed it, because it immediately got out stimulus payments to most people. Some people I know are still waiting for those, but we, for instance, my organization has been reaching out to individuals and asking them, you know, have you received your payment and what did you use it for? And that's giving us some really interesting insight into what's been going on for New Hampshire families during the pandemic, because a lot of people have received it, you know, and the stimulus payment was $1,400. It was to bring up to $2,000 the amount that people would get in 2021 with the payment that was made in January. And the parameters for that were changed a little bit from some of the previous stimulus payments to make it, you know, more targeted to people who are more likely to be struggling at this time, given where their income levels are at. But we're hearing from people, you know, that, for instance, we talked to somebody last week who's a single mother with a child, both of whom have disabilities. They were using the stimulus payments directly to pay for caregiving that they were needing for their disabilities during the pandemic, and then also using it to help stock their freezer because they've been food insecure during the pandemic. And so, really basic needs that people are using those funds to help fill the gap and to help them make ends meet. And hearing a lot of things like that, you know, another person who has been out of work, and one of the contributing factors being that they can't get their car on the road. They used the stimulus payment to pay for the car repairs they needed so that they could get a working car, and now are working to get back into the workforce. So really nuts and bolts for people to be recovering from this pandemic and some of the financial insecurity people have been faced with. So that's one immediate thing that passed. Another thing that, a couple of other things that I want to make sure that people really understand, because they're coming up, are the child care tax credit that was passed as part of the proposal, and the earned income tax credit expansion. There's actually a deadline coming up of May 17th, where if people file their taxes, their 2020 taxes, by May 17th, they'll be able to get an advanced payment of their child care tax credits. And so these are tax credits. So it's, you actually get money back even if you don't owe taxes. And so it's really important that people file, and the earned income tax credit is the same thing. And that actually has been expanded for people without children, so that it's really targeted at people who are financially struggling, even if they don't have children. So folks at the lowest income brackets. And with the child care tax credit, starting this summer, there's the ability, if you have filed your taxes before May 17th, to get advanced payments on that. So not to wait until you file your 2021 taxes next year. But for families with kids in the age range of 0 to 5, they'll get $300 per month toward that, from that tax credit, paid in advance. And then similarly for kids with ages families with kids aged 6 to 17, that's $250 per month. And that can be used on childcare payments. It can be used to fill your gas tank. It's really meant to help lift families with kids out of poverty and help them to succeed during this time.
And if you're out there listening and want to take it, you know, file your taxes by May 17th, what are there Vita sites, other sites to help people with their taxes? Let's say someone's struggling and they need assistance. What advice do you give to them about, you know, getting help, getting their taxes done?
Yeah, there actually is. The IRS has a site for to help people to find free tax preparation services, and so you can find that online and work to get help with free tax filing.
And in addition to the Earned Income Tax Credit expansion, the Child Care Tax Credit, as well as the direct stimulus payments, Amanda, there was also some direct assistance for child care in the American Rescue Plan. And yesterday, the White House unveiled some guidance and the distribution of the funds for child care. What can you talk about the issue of child care generally, as also what can you talk about in terms of the American Rescue Plan, and also probably a good segue to the American Families Plan?
Yeah, so child care has been something that has been a struggle in New Hampshire and beyond for a really long time, so pre-pandemic. But the pandemic has exacerbated a lot of the problems that were already simmering for the child care sector of our economy. So during the early days of the pandemic, a lot of child care centers closed. We've been seeing child care centers steadily closing over the last 20 years in New Hampshire. And so this was not a new phenomenon, but it was accelerated, where I believe it was in the previous 20 years, we had lost about 30% of child care centers in the state, and now we've lost even more. And I don't have an exact figure for how many that is, but I do know that there are many centers that closed in the early days of the pandemic and haven't been able to open up. Even for those that are open, one of the big things that is making it hard for them to expand the amount of kids that they can take in, you know, there's, you know, clear things that would limit that, like how much space they have. But the workforce shortage that they're suffering from is a really big contributing factor to that. So we need more people to be working in the child care sector. And one of the big things that has held people back from working in that sector is that the wages are really low. And so I believe that they're about $12 an hour has been the average wage for a child care worker in New Hampshire. And that makes it so that it is more competitive to, you know, work in other industries, you know, almost any other industry at this point, than to enter the child care field. And so one of the things that, you know, with the new proposals or the new plans that have come out and the guidance that has come out yesterday from the Department of Health and Human Services and the White House is to help make sure that states understand that the child care stabilization funding can be used for a number of different things and really is intended to get out to providers immediately. And so that can be used to help raise wages for the workforce, you know, to subsidize the wages that centers are using. It can be used to help meet, fill the gaps on some of the ways that that scholarship funds are available to families. So right now, for instance, families that receive some tuition assistance, they don't get that for days that their children can't attend. And so right now, where we've had so many families who've been had to keep their kids out for 2 weeks to quarantine their kids because there's been a potential exposure to COVID, those families who have to keep their kids out are losing the scholarship funding for those days.
And they still have to pay. Yep.
It means that they have to pay. And it also means, because those families who qualify for child care scholarships are most likely to be, you know, they are low income, that's why they qualify, and lower income people are least likely to have access to paid sick days. And so not only are they suddenly having to pay for those that tuition that was previously covered by scholarship, but they also are often missing work, and so missing out on income because they don't have paid sick days. So that's another piece that was included in the American Rescue Plan, was an extension of tax credits for paid sick days, so that employers can currently be getting a tax credit against paid sick days that they are offering to their workers to allow them to be out to quarantine or to get better from COVID-related issues.
So let's talk about a family of four, for example, under the rescue plan. So the parents got the stimulus checks, which, as you said, amounted to $2,000 apiece if they have a combined income of under $150,000. Now, for kids, is it, do they get cash? You know, just clarify it for those who aren't as you know, up to speed on these things as you guys are. But for each child, do they get $3,000 cash, or is it tax credits?
Well, a tax credit, when it's paid in advance, is basically cash.
Right.
So with the child care tax credit that people are going to be eligible to get in advance starting this summer, that will actually show up like the stimulus checks have for many people. It actually will just show up in their bank account if they're eligible for them, and will be, you know, either $300 or $250 per month. And so that, you know, it's called a tax credit, but what a tax credit is essentially cash.
Yeah, so that amounts to, if you have a family of four, you're getting what amounts to and what is $10,000 cash.
If you have child, if you have child care expenses, right? But on the stimulus side, to Ken's question, Amanda, you know, that if you are a family of four, and you're eligible, you're under the income cap, you would get four times out of the American Rescue Plan, four times 1,400, so 5,600 is what you would get, and then on top of that, if you have child care expenses, then you can apply and get the child care tax credit. And Amanda, you said you can apply to receive it prospectively in 2021.
The child care tax credit, yes. So starting this summer, those payments will start going out to families so that they do not need to wait until after they file their taxes. Because one of the, you know, it doesn't help to rescue or stimulate families if they have to wait till next year to get that credit. So that's one of the, part of the design of the program was to make sure that people could be eligible for those credits early.
And
starting this summer.
And that, Amanda, would that be a lump sum payment moving, you know, one time for the next year, or would it be deposited every month, or has that been resolved?
My understanding is that it will be every month, and so it's really designed to, you know, help people in an ongoing fashion from June or July of this year through the end of the year.
And what is contemplated in the American Families Plan to help with child care? Based on my brief review of what President Biden and others have talked about, there is basically a bolstering of like the child care scholarship, basically akin to it, where, you know, low to middle income families don't pay any more than 7% of their income on child care. Is that an accurate summary? And if not, what's in the American Families Plan to help with child care?
Yeah, that's an accurate summary, actually, is, you know, so while the rescue plan was really focused on some of these direct stimulus, one of the things that the pandemic, you know, I think uncovered is that we, you know, it was pretty shocking to a lot of people that within a week of businesses closing and people being out of work suddenly, you know, you had lines of people in their cars, you know, going miles down the road for people going to food banks, because that's how food insecure and generally financially insecure working families are. You know, we had been working to publicize the fact that pre-pandemic, there were about 40% of American families couldn't afford an unexpected $400 expense. And so you really have a lot of families who have been living not just paycheck to paycheck, but, you know, each paycheck, they're sort of falling behind a little bit more. And so I think that with the American Families Plan, it's a real intent to figure out how we move forward. And, you know, as the statement that has been put out there is build back better. But so recognize where some of these fault lines are that are making families live so close to the edge, and see what we can do to invest to help make sure that working families are keeping their head above water better. And so one of those pieces is child care, because child care can be an enormous burden for working families. A family in New Hampshire that has two young kids can be paying more than $20,000 a year in child care, and easily, if they can find it. And sometimes, you know, it's really hard to find because we have had so many closures of centers and there's a real shortage there. So what the families plan seeks to do is to provide direct support to ensure that low and middle income families spend no more than 7% of their income on child care. And so that really is a real expansion of the scholarship program that has previously been in existence to support working families. And of course, what that does is it takes away the biggest burden to getting more people into our workforce. And so the people who have been hit the hardest with needing to be out on unemployment and having a hard time getting back to work from the pandemic have been women with children, because child care has been both hard to come by and sporadic. And schools, you know, too, even with schools opening, I was talking to somebody last week whose school had finally opened, you know, back to 5 days, and they were so excited, and their kids went on Monday, and on Tuesday they got a note that the whole school had to close down for 2 weeks because of a super spreader event that had happened. And so, you know, when you have that kind of patchiness to your ability to have, you know, to be able to depend on your care, and so that you're suddenly needing to be out for another 2 weeks, it puts your ability to hold a job and stay in that job at real risk. And that's why so many people are still out on unemployment who have young kids and are struggling with child care.
Our guest today is Amanda Sears of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. Feldes and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL and HTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Back with more right after these words. 1039 1450 WKXL and HTalkRadio.com. Feldes and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Amanda Sears is back, and she is with the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. And I was so glad to hear, Amanda, during our first segment today, that the daycare centers, the child care centers that have been so much in need are getting, if you will, a slice of the economic pie and getting some much needed help.
Yeah, it's really important because, you know, there's been so much talk about infrastructure lately, and there's been a little bit of a debate about, you know, whether things like, you know, child care are part of infrastructure. But I would have to say that I learned, you know, personally, I have three young kids, you know, during the pandemic, I didn't actually need a road or bridge to get to work. But what I did need is broadband and childcare, yeah. And those were the biggest things that made it possible for me to get my job done. And I'm lucky enough that I've been able to, throughout the pandemic, continue to work from home. But working from home, I still needed to have help with childcare, and I still needed to have access to the internet. And so I join you in being really glad that childcare is getting some real focus on how important it is as an underpinning to our workforce, because it is the biggest thing that the need to care, and whether that is caring for children or caring for other members of our families who suffer from disabilities or are trying to stay home and out of long-term care facilities, care is the biggest thing that holds people back from being able to join our workforce. And so if we can provide support that makes sure that we can meet our caregiving needs, new people can come into our workforce and fill those jobs that a lot of New Hampshire employers are desperate to fill.
Well, I think everybody shares the value of work, shares the value of family, and if you have those values, and I know Ken and I and you, Amanda, do, and I know our listeners do too, then you should value the proposition. You shouldn't have to choose between work and family if at all possible, and so child care is a key component of that. It's a key component to getting our economy moving again. What are some of the additional child care, what are some of the additional proposals that will affect working families in the American Families Plan as proposed, and certainly if you want to talk about the American Jobs Plan as proposed too, as it impacts working families, feel free. What are some of the proposals that folks should be aware of?
Yeah, so in addition to the child care piece, paid family and medical leave is another piece. And again, that gets to the fact that when we're thinking about care, the first thing that comes to mind for many of us is often children. But in fact, caregiving and unpaid caregiving is, I think it's in New Hampshire, it's over $3 billion per year in unpaid care that is given by family members to people in need of care. And so that's everything from, you know, somebody needing to be out of work themselves to recover from a surgery, That includes a spouse who is helping their spouse through cancer treatments. It includes somebody who is home with their elderly parent, helping them to transition into, you know, some of the scary things that might be happening as they get early onset dementia or other long-term problems that, you know, sometimes affect people as they age. So there are a lot of different kinds of care needs that families have, and, you know, families often suffer with those individually and see them as an individual problem that they need to fix. But when we think about the overall problems that those create for our economy, with people needing to leave the workforce, instability of people being able to show up for work when they are expected, a lot of other countries, and most other countries have done this with paid maternity care, and many with paid family and medical leave. If you think about it systemically and think about how can we make sure that we build a system that recognizes that if we want to have as many people as possible in the workforce, and if that's what our economy depends on, people are going to occasionally need time out to care. And we should build a system that recognizes that and that supports people being able to balance both as well as they possibly can. And paid family and medical leave is something that does that. So the families plan recognizes that and proposes up to 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave that would allow somebody to take time out from work when they need to care for themselves or a family member. So that's a big piece that I'm really excited about. And then a couple of the other things that are in there that I'm particularly excited about. There's, you know, a lot in there, but is an extension of public education by 4 years. So that really acknowledges that the needs that we have for preparing people for the, you know, the workforce of tomorrow requires more education than we have been providing, and it really can better prepare our kids for the future that we hope to build for them. And so the American Families Plan proposes increasing access to pre-K so that there's going to be 2 years available for public pre-K, pre-kindergarten, preschool for kids, and then access available for everybody to 2 years of community college following high school graduation. And so that is something that could really increase access to higher education and to the fundamentals of public preschool. I know when I was little, we didn't have public preschool. We also didn't have public kindergarten. And so my first day of school was my first day of first grade. And I had to, you know, struggle for a little while in my early days of school because my family wasn't able to afford to send me to school until first grade because they couldn't afford non-public private preschool or kindergarten. And so the more that we can do to get kids into schools early, get them learning the fundamentals, the better prepared they're going to be as learners and as part of our workforce in the future.
Of course, New Hampshire is one of only 6 states that does not provide any local support to our local school districts and schools on pre-K. One of only 6 states, New Hampshire is. And recently, through efforts, Ken, we were able to fully support full-day kindergarten at the State House. And we did that in the last budget, it appears as though that will be hanging on. But
I'll help out by playing Keno from time to time.
You got it. Amanda, what is the status of, you know, obviously the American Rescue Plan is passed, signed into law, the stimulus checks went out, we got the child care guidance and money going out. Guidance went out yesterday and money's going out. The money to the state and municipalities is going out soon. But what is the status of the American Families Plan? Where does it sit right now? And what is its prospects of success?
Yeah, so both the American Families Plan and the American Jobs Plan were promoted, you know, laid out by President Biden over the last couple of months. And are the next piece of, you know, a big piece of work that Congress will be working through. And I think that what they are working to figure out is how to take them up, you know, so whether to take, you know, and one of the big pieces of that is figuring out where they can gain bipartisan support for these proposals. Because I think that anything that we could get bipartisan support for, you know, might make more sense to take those as a package and pass those with bipartisan support and then figure out what some of the other plans are that have less bipartisan support and work on them separately and try to get those passed. Is not something that they may be considering. But I know that there's a lot of work going on in Congress right now to figure out what the right approach is to try to get the best pieces of policy passed, and what the most effective way to, you know, work through all the crazy dynamics that you get in politics, so that
right.
So they can have their best shot at success.
Well, they're
in process.
If you care about infrastructure, funding for roads, bridges, broadband, if you care about human infrastructure and the care economy, paid family leave, child care, have your voice heard. Reach out to the delegation. I know that they're supportive, but it doesn't hurt to have your voice heard and write letters to the editor, do Facebook posts, that kind of thing. I think that, Amanda, can you talk to the activism component of this? It's not enough just to be out there as a citizen. I believe firmly in that quote from Justice Brandeis that there's no more important office in a democracy than that of private citizen, that you have to be engaged. If you can talk about the role that you play in helping lift up voices on the ground, people, stories that they have, what it's important to them, their families, and our communities, and how important it is for people to speak up and have their voice heard.
Yeah, it's just incredibly important because as individuals, you know, there's nobody's fighting for you but you, really, you know, and so being able to share your experience is vitally important. And so, you know, if you, look at what's happening in the, I mean, right now it's a little more virtual, but generally in the halls of any state house or Congress, there are a lot of lobbyists, and I am a registered lobbyist, so I'll claim that. There are a lot of lobbyists, and, you know, so their corporate entities can, you know, they make an investment in making sure that their voice and their perspective is heard by our elected officials. And individual voices are heard far less because they're not there, because we're at work. and we're not organized as well as, you know, business entities are. And so in order for people's voices to be heard, it really does matter for you to speak up. And that doesn't have to, you know, I think that activism sometimes sounds like something scary that I don't do, you know, that somebody might think I'm not an activist, I don't do that. But in this case, what it really means is talk about how these policies matter to you, you know, whether that's through a letter to the editor, whether it's a call to your member of Congress, being able to say, that stimulus check, that really helped me. It just helped me in these specific ways. That makes a really big impact because when we have our government make the kinds of investment that over the past year our government has made to help make sure that people can come through this pandemic as strongly as possible, it's really important that those investments get talked about and so that the story of how that impacted people is told, because that's how we continue to make those investments. That's how we can make the case for the next kinds of investments that will help working families. And so letters to the editor, calling your member of Congress, you can reach out to my organization and we will help you to organize. Again, it's the Campaign for Family-Friendly Economy. So if you Google that, you'll find us. Really making sure that if any of these policies have helped you or could help you in the future, if some of the American Families Plan or Jobs Plan policies were to pass, speak up, because that's how change gets made.
Amanda Sears is with us from the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. There's one other aspect I want to touch on, Amanda, but we have to take a quick break here. It's Feltus and Kale at 103.9 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 103.9 1450 WKXL and NHTalkRadio.com. Feltus and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Our guest today, and a return guest to Feltus and Kale. She dared to come back for a second time. Amanda Sears of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy. I just wanted to touch on the insurance aspect because, you know, as people lose jobs during the pandemic, what are the guidelines, what are the benefits, if you will, for those who had to go on COBRA to replace work-issued insurance or the ACA health insurance or Obamacare? What is being provided for in that aspect of our society?
Sure. So in the American Rescue Plan, healthcare support was a key feature of that. And there are a number of different ways in which it was included in that bill. So first, over the next 2 years, it puts about $35 billion into premium subsidy increases. So that's to help people to afford health insurance on the ACA marketplace, on the health insurance marketplace. And then it also makes those subsidies more generous, and so that it can really help to decrease the amount that people have to pay out of pocket. It also provides a subsidy of 100% for COBRA premiums for 6 months to people who lost employment or had reduced hours because of COVID. And so, you know, helps for people to have that bridge from having workplace health insurance if they had that and lost their job to having some support for their COBRA payments. So those are a couple of the investments that were made through the American Rescue Plan. So those are in effect because that bill passed. And people, you know, there's also a new open enrollment period where people, if they haven't been on the marketplace for health insurance, can get on and sign up for that those benefits.
That is outstanding because so many people have lost their jobs during the pandemic, unfortunately. And, you know, they were certainly wondering where that insurance was going to come from. And so you have made it quite clear. So, Amanda, optimistic about the future that people will soon be able to get back to work, all the people who want to be able to get back to work?
I am. So I think, you know, I am waiting for my second shot and know that most people that I know have been able to access vaccines. We really need to get more people taking advantage of those so that we can increase the immunity of our herd. With the availability of vaccines now, with the strong demand that we have for a lot of workplaces are, you know, they're sort of right back where they started, you know, pre-pandemic with demand for filling the jobs that they have open. And then, you know, there's some real recovery that needs to happen for particular industries like our tourism and restaurant industries that have been particularly hard hit. You know, there are a bunch of provisions to help those both in the rescue plan and looking forward in the families plan and Jobs Act. And so, but I think that I would say I am optimistic. And I think that what we need to take out of this, though, is a sense of what we need to do in the future to make sure that we can be more resilient, because I think that it's it was really telling how quickly something, you know, this little virus could really take us to our knees. And we need to be more resilient in the future so that families and the country are more resilient going forward.
And Amanda, we got to wrap up in a little bit, but you touched on it earlier. One of the when you talked about the need for childcare to get back to work, increase labor force participation rate. And there's still tens of thousands of Granite Staters, disproportionately women, who, you know, need that help so they don't have to choose between work and family to reengage in the labor market. There has been some rhetoric out there for whatever reason, basically blaming unemployed workers who are receiving unemployment insurance for receiving unemployment. Even though it's unemployment insurance, that's what it's there for. Can you address, and this has been refuted by Secretary Yellen, Treasury Secretary Yellen, and others, that, and even President Biden yesterday talked about how if you receive unemployment insurance and you're offered a suitable job, you got to take it. If you don't, you get kicked off of unemployment. So this notion that people are just sort of whatever, freeloading or whatever the rhetoric is in my view, condescending. Can you talk about the real impediments to workers getting back in the workforce? You've already touched on it, but if you can address that rhetoric out there, it'd be great.
Yeah, no, I think that is, it's a really unfortunate storyline makes us assume the worst of people who have been impacted the worst by job loss from the pandemic. And, you know, at this point, childcare is one of the biggest cited reasons that people have for not working. And while there have been investments in our child care sector, as I said, there are still a lot of centers that aren't open that have permanently closed their doors. There's also a lot of the kind of wraparound support. So, you know, as children get a little bit older, they in our school age, they might not be in a full-time child care program. They're at school. But a lot of families rely on preschool, you know, care before school, care after school. They're going to, they would have relied on summer programs. You know, I have been looking for summer programs for my kids for this summer, and they are few and far between and already overbooked. And so it remains the case that we have care needs, that care is one of the biggest reasons that people aren't getting back into the workforce. And the other thing is we continue to have these patchy, opportunities for people to get to work, because when you're constantly having to get pull your kids out because of quarantine, it's another big problem. The other thing is, I think that people have been, there some of the guidance that President Biden put out yesterday was related to people getting on and off unemployment, because when guidelines are unclear for people, it makes them a little bit more hesitant sometimes to take patchy employment because they're worried about losing their benefits. So there's a real push. I know that the president started yesterday to make sure that it's very clear to people that to straighten up our unemployment guidelines and make sure that those are clear so that folks can take short-term work as it's offered to them and not fear losing those benefits. And so, but I think that the idea that people would rather get what are still really thin benefits on unemployment than getting a paycheck is really misguided.
Well, Amanda, we appreciate your insight and coming back on Feltus and Kale. And, you're in line now to maybe become our first three-time guest. So, so there you go. But thanks, Amanda, so much. How can people, get more information and stay on top of these things a little bit better?
Sure. Well, they can look us up on Facebook or Twitter or online, the Campaign for Family-Friendly Economy. And we have a team of folks who would love to connect with anybody to help them share their experience or figure out how to get involved.
Very good. Amanda, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. Amanda Sears of the Campaign for a Family-Friendly Economy with us here on Feltus and Kale. And, boy, I'll tell you, you go everywhere. You can't drive a half a mile without seeing a help wanted sign.
Yep.
I mean, so many places are. And I guess it's kind of subjective as to what is a suitable job. I heard what Biden had to say the other day about, if a job is offered to you, and you don't take it, then you're going to lose benefits. But that's always been in place. That's always been the case. That's not new.
Yeah, no, and I think what they're doing is just trying to clarify and reinforce that. And I think with temporary work, seasonal work, we have a lot of industry in New Hampshire, tourism industry, that need that seasonal work.
Yep.
So making that clear and clarifying those rules is important. But you're right, Ken. That's a rule that's been in place in terms of rejecting suitable work forever. I used to, I was a legal aid attorney for about a decade and represented people receiving unemployment. It's pretty strict. It's pretty strict. And you got to do it every week. You got to document every week that you look for work. You got to document that you didn't reject suitable work.
All right.
And if you mess it up, if you get tripped up, you're off of unemployment insurance. So this is no joke. It is stringent and it's strict. It should be. It's taxpayer money. But on the same token, these are people in this environment have been crushed by job loss. For some folks out there to basically blame unemployed workers who are crushed by job loss, I think that's outrageous. Let's look at the impediments to getting back to work. Let's work on efficiency, streamlining the system, clarifying the rules, child care, paid family leave, the kinds of things that we know that will work to bolster our workforce and help our businesses. That's what we ought to be focused on, not blaming unemployed workers like some people are doing.
No, and I my heart really and truly goes out to those child care workers, the child care facilities all over the state, all over the country, because I think really they are so important, really, when you think about it, to the economy, as you well know. I think they deserve probably a lot more help than what they're actually getting.
I agree. And, look at the state level, unfortunately, Ken, Governor Sununu and the House Republican budget cuts child care help for working class families. And maybe they're trying to look down the road and anticipating the American Families Plan passing. But I don't think that's the right way to go. We've got to, at all levels, we got to support working class families, that need child care. We got to support the child care providers. Ken, as you know, I got Aaron and I are fortunate. We have two amazing daughters, Iris and Josie. They're in child care. I don't know what we'd be able to do without child care help.
Yeah. I felt the same way when I was, raising a family as well. It would have been nearly impossible to do to have both parents working in that scenario. And certainly in these days, in most cases, both parents do have to work. So the child care becomes increasingly important, as it has been for so many years. No doubt about that. Heading down the home stretch on this edition of Feldis and Kale. Great to have you along with us. Tell your friends that we're on every single day.
Monday every single
Friday
day.
At 11:05.
By popular demand.
That's right. And we pop up elsewhere, too, during the course of the broadcast day. So you never know when Feldis and Kale may be on your radio here at 103.9 1450 WKXL. NHTalkRadio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Just a couple of minutes left on this edition of Feldis and Kale, coming to you live, in some cases, on 103.9 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We're presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And on our next edition of Feldis and Kale, we will be joined by Amy Hall. And, this is Amy's most exciting time of the year, because as we approach Memorial Day weekend, it's the ice cream trail.
It
gets underway. You can get your brochures and your passports, as it were, from all the New Hampshire rest areas, of which there are many, and they will be available there and elsewhere. We'll speak with Amy about that. Scoop on that ice cream trail. That is correct, Dan Feldis. I love that. And also, joining us on our next edition will be Anna Brown from Citizens Count. Today, by the way, Dan Feldis, is Eat What You Want Day. Eat what you want.
Well, for those who are listening who are on a diet, that's great news.
It is great news.
It's a reprieve.
So I think if you're on a diet, though, you might not celebrate that day.
Well, it's a pass, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess. Unfortunately, the calories don't pass.
That's right.
But if you want to take one day off of your diet, this may be the day. Eat what you want.
What are you going to eat today?
And ironically enough, it is also it coincides with another day, and that is it's also Hostess Cupcakes Day.
Oh, well, that's a great confluence of factors there. I'm going to have to get some cupcakes.
Yeah, absolutely. What am I going to eat today? I don't know. I'm going to go to a restaurant probably on Loudoun Road today. I won't mention the name because they're not a sponsor here, but they have the best fish chowder anywhere. So I'm going to celebrate National Eat What You Want Day with a big bowl of fish chowder and maybe even some onion rings today.
Well, that sounds great.
So there you go. And don't forget, it's also the start of the local professional sports season this week. Tuesday, when this show first airs, is opening night for the New Hampshire Fisher Cats at Northeast Delta Dental Stadium.
You got it. And what is it? We had Mike Ramshaw on from Fisher Cats. Are they doing 40% capacity? What, I forget what it was.
Yeah, I think he said 40 or 50.
40 or 50. Yeah.
And it's a great place to watch a ball game. If you've never attended a game at Northeast Delta Dental Stadium, I would recommend that you do so. It's a great family event. I know that later on during this homestand, I'm going to take my grandchildren to a game, and I've done it before. I'll do it again. And I know opening night, which is Tuesday when this program, as I said, first airs, fireworks after the game. And if you have never seen a fireworks display at Northeast Delta Dental Stadium, they are second to none.
They are. They're great.
The Atlas fireworks displays there are great. So get out and enjoy. Take the family to a great family-oriented ballpark and check out some great minor league baseball from the Toronto Blue Jays AA affiliate, the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. And, you know, I'll probably slip back sometime and call it in the Eastern League, but they're not anymore. They've reclassified the minor leagues, but they're still Double A, which is theoretically two steps away from the big leagues, but some great talent at the Double A level, and some go right from Double A to the major leagues.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Well, Dan Feldes, I know you'll be taking your family in the not-too-distant future.
No doubt.
And we've got to wrap it up. We appreciate you joining us today on Feldes and Kale, as always, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.